Adult Authors. I'm Joanne Morrell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode.
Hello, authors. I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast. Today's interview is with Brooke Scobie, embarking on adventure, yarn quest, and the magic of children's fantasy. And we chat the inspiration to create her yarn quest series and how she used her own experiences to shape the story and its characters, her process for developing the unique elements of the yarn quest universe, and how it captivates young readers while remaining relatable, balancing the need for engaging storytelling with important life lessons or themes, and the messages she hopes young readers will take away from Yarn Quest, marketing, social media for authors, and much more. So in my author adventure this last week, if you were listening to the episode before, you'll know it's been my birthday. I turned the big 40. So I had lots of fun celebrating that with friends and family. I went out for murder mystery nights at the weekend. And yeah, that was really fun. I haven't actually done anything like that before. It was a 1920s, kind of meant to be set in the English countryside, storytelling. It was called A Fete, like F-E-T-E, Worse Than Death. And included in the price was like a 3-course meal. And the way that they run the event was that they had a cast of characters. They had a storyline, a cast of characters, and they were coming around the tables and they were storytelling, oral storytelling. And you were allowed to ask them questions to get answers back off them and be trying to make your decision on who you thought the murderer was. And then halfway through the events, you know, other people were getting killed. And there was more motives and things like that. So it was really fun. There were a really good bunch of actors. I ended up guessing it. Our table got one guess and the unanimous vote wasn't correct. So we didn't get it right. But I mean, it was a good laugh. It was good fun. And the obvious choice was the murderer, which sometimes that's not always the case. And people might not go for that because they think it's too obvious. And it's also a choice because it's too obvious. You're steered away from that, thinking things have to be more complicated than they actually are. In this case, it wasn't. It was a good night. Real good fun. So now the birthday shenanigans are over. I have started my 40s. And much the same, if you were listening to the other interview episode where I was talking about turning 40 and 4 years of the podcast, and I was mentioning that I was a bit freaked out by turning 40. But that's now kind of faded into the background and 40s have begun. And I don't feel any different now. So how hybrid are you? How hybrid are you is going to be another part of the podcast that I talk about. And it's really just defining lots of aspects of hybridness. So in line with this event, this murder mystery event that I went to, I was thinking about adaptation of work again and storytelling to event, you know, your story and turning it into event, because the narrator of that event was John, I can't remember his name, something Mapletree. I'm pretty sure he was just an actor and a character as well. I don't know if he actually was the author. His character was the author and he was narrating the event about what had gone on and things like that. It was pretty cool. I thought about that. We got brochures with the story written down. It made me think about a story that was written down and brought to life by, you know, you do get sort of book to play, J.K. Rowling's The Cursed Child that was turned into a theatre production. Diane Wolfer's The Lighthouse Girl was adapted to theatre. So it's again, it's sort of having the story and being able to turn that into lots of different things. It's very clever to think about these things. I wonder if you can think about your work, your writing, and how you could turn that into an oral event. What event would you be able to run? doesn't have to be another fictional storytelling, but you could really have a lot of fun with it. That's something I'm pondering this week. Even just for the fun of it, sit down and think about your story and how and what events you could turn it into. And just, you know, have fun with it. Don't even think this is actually something you're going to do. Maybe it will be. Let your imagination create events from your written work, from your stories, and see what happens. You could end up with something really cool. And if you do, I'd absolutely love to hear from you. Please reach out at joanne@hybridauthor.com.au or through social media.
Thorn Creative, where beautiful websites for authors are brought to life. No matter what stage you're at with your writing, your stories deserve a dedicated space to shine. Whether you're just starting out or have a bookshelf full of bestsellers, your website is the hub of your author business, binding everything you and your books offer together. Thorn Creative can nurture all aspects of redesigning your old site or start afresh from the initial design. They can provide ongoing hosting and maintenance to marketing your books online, saving you time, money, and stress trying to wrangle your site yourself. An author website built by Thorn Creative can easily direct readers to your favorite retailers, your publisher, or simply set you up to sell to them direct. The options are endless. Thorn Creative have worked with many authors across all genres and know what goes into good, functional, working author websites to sell books. Head on over to thorncreative.com.au/websitesforauthors to read author and publisher testimonials and to see what they offer and some of the sites they've created. Scobie is a queer AUDHD First Nations mum, author and poet that lives on Darkinyung land. Ever since she was very little, Brooke has loved books and stories, which of course makes sense since they grew up with a mum whose favourite thing was her overflowing bookcase and reading before bed. Brooke is most passionate about creating stories and worlds where weird, wonderful kids and adults of all shapes and sizes can see themselves in magical places on extraordinary adventures. She hopes that one day every child who reads her stories will know they can be a storyteller too. Welcome to the Hybrid Author Podcast, Brooke.
Hello.
We are so excited to speak to you today. Thanks for joining us. And we'd just love to know, you know, obviously you had a storytelling mum and maybe that's where the inspiration came. What was the kind of adventure that led you to be where you are now as a writer?
I like telling this story because I liked more people to learn and think about why they love reading or writing, et cetera. So my mum's a Stephen King. Fanatic is probably not even the word. I feel like tragic probably is correct. She would attest to it. She wouldn't argue with me. So for me, like, I always saw her reading. She was always reading, especially before we had, you know, you can pause the TV, watch whatever you want. She was always reading something. And she had a lovely little bookcase that my dad made for her because he's a carpenter. And there was just always books in there. She'd save up money to buy the hard copy versions of the Stephen King book she'd already read until it was falling apart.
Wow.
And so for me, like, reading was normal. And I was, my mum and dad both read to me. My dad doesn't read as much, but he read all of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and A Clockwork Orange. Those are his only books that he's ever read.
It was like, to you?
No, look at me. To himself. They were his only books.
I was like, wow, they really later. Went for it. In your
As an adult. I'm like, A Clockwork Orange for a child. That would be hilarious. But yeah, I could read before I went to school. And I think it's because my parents were like also obsessed with reading to us. But it wasn't until I'd say I was about, I think I was 12. And the series Everworld by K.A. Applegate changed my life. Wow. I read all 12 books in the summer holidays like a freak. And I was going into high school, I think. So it was like the summer of 99 to 2000. And so all 12 of them are out because I think I was younger, too young for them before. And for a book written in the 90s, or books rather written in the 90s, it was pretty inclusive and it told such a story of these teenagers and their lives and the things that they faced in the real world as well as exploring all this like fantasy and magic. And I remember ending it and not wanting to leave, and you feel like you're a part of it. And I think from there, I felt like I want to read more, but also I wanted to be able to create something like that. You know, as an adult, I love like Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and all of that kind of high fantasy. And the idea that you can create an entire universe that people can spend their lives trying to study and understand and become obsessive nerds about, that's the dream. So for me, it's been K.A. Applegate, who is the non-evil J.K. Rowling, so we love her, creating stories that completely just blew my brain into a million pieces. And now here we are.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, with your parents as well, when I got the mix up with The Clockwork Orange, I just thought, you could just picture a child in bed like that, you know, with the mother with Stephen King and the dad with The Clockwork Orange. Yeah, it'd be hilarious. That's a good story, actually.
My dad was very good, very excited when I was old enough to be able to watch the movie. But yes, yeah. As an adult, then I started reading the Stephen King ones that my mum suggested and things like that. So wow. I think fantasy and just wild worlds and stuff has always been something to draw me in.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, today we're chatting about your work's Yarn Quest, which introduces readers to magical world, which you love, filled with adventure. And so what inspired this series? You know, it's got such a quirky title as well. And as some of your own experiences, you know, shaped the story and its character.
Definitely. So if we start with the title, this series began as a kids' podcast. So you can still find it online. The podcast is called Yarn Quest. Yarn being in a lot of different cultures, but for us in also Aboriginal sort of slang, having a yarn is also having a conversation. And I know in a lot of like, I think that's also used in some Celtic communities as well, as like having a yarn is just sort of slang for having a conversation. But sometimes it can mean having a more deep conversation rather than just surface level. And so Jade, my illustrator, and I, we work together and we're friends and we created the podcast together. So she came up with the idea, and it was to celebrate National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Children's Day. And so we're like, we'll just do one episode. Three seasons later. Editing children telling stories, let me tell you, very hard, but just so much fun. And being able to provide a platform for even the tiniest little kids, we sometimes had three-year-olds telling stories.
That is gorgeous.
And it would just be like, a little 30-second thing that they'd come up with of like, often it had lollies or farts in it. and the I love my mummy and just beautiful things like that. It just like, oh, and it was so inspiring. And the three main kids were obviously because, you know, we were making them work for us. My kid, Sybil, she started doing the podcast when she was four. And now she's eight. And then P and Tane, who are one of my best friend Tully's kids. And they're also Jade's nibblings. So we were all together in the house recording podcasts, and they were writing the most out of this world, ridiculous stories. And we were creating them and voicing them together. So that's where the title came from and where the concept was. And Jade and I, because Jade's already an illustrator and I'm a writer, we were like, we want to make this into a world, a universe, a something bigger than the podcast. Like, let's continue it on. And so we did. We did a lot of planning and thinking and brainstorming, but I knew that I wanted these stories to feature the real kids, the kids that were the guts of the original podcast and who have been advising us, our child advisors, from the very beginning. So when you read the stories, you'll see that Sybil, Tane, and P are the three main characters. And each book is dedicated to each of those children. They're, each one of them gets to be a star. So in the first book, the star is Tane. The second one, P, is the star. And the third one, My Sybil, that's her little book, which is the final of the series. So much of it is inspired by country, the country that I've grown up on, the country that I live on now, and also the connections that, like, we have, myself, Tully, our kids, to country and to community. And my editors have even said when we first started that country is a character in and of itself. All kids in Australia and outside of Australia, when they read this book, to either feel something that is familiar and feels like home, or something that's completely different to where they live. If you were in Scotland, right, you're hearing about these big eucalyptus trees and this red dirt or this, that, and whatever. It's that feels magic, but it's also something that really exists.
Yeah.
So it's kind of honoring these kids, honoring the power of children, honoring the power of country and all that kind of stuff. And also like creating fun adventures and magic for them too.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. And I love thinking about you all podcasting together, especially young kids. I think even exposing them to that is so much fun. If they were a character in the book and the fact that your kids have got like, sort of, you know, one dedicated to them and then another, I just know how excited they would be with that. It's such a unique thing.
We finally read through all three of them with, now that we have the hard copies, me and Sybil, like as bedtime story stuff. And she has never been that hooked into a story. And I'm like, I keep asking the kids, it's hard because their names are in it. It's written about them. They are stars. So I'm like, is it good? Do you actually like it? Or do you just love that you're in it? It's hard to tell. But so far, the kids seem happy with the story. So I am too.
Have they made suggestions that have kind of ended up in there that they're sort of looking for and you've just built up on
100%.
It?
From the very beginning, I wanted to, in a similar way that people talk about own stories, like, you know, women writing women's stories, queer people writing queer stories. I think it's important for children to be platformed to be a part of creating their stories. Mm-hmm. Now, they might not have the skills to write a chapter book, but what they do have is imagination and just these powerful voices about change that they want to see in the world.
Yeah.
I think a good example in the second book, the entire book is based around the concept of greed and why greed is bad. And that completely came from P. When we got the go ahead from Penguin to say, yes, we would like a series. And I was like, okay, I have to write three books now. Cool. I sat down with P as the oldest. I sort of started with them as well and said, I want the second book to be yours. What do you want it to be about? And now P's like birth name is got to do with rivers, and they've always been connected to rivers on both their cultural sides of being an Aboriginal person and also a Māori person. So for them, they wanted it to have rivers in it and they wanted it to be about greed.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
I just ran with it from there. And I'd often ask the kids, there's a lot of fart jokes. That's all Tane. He's very the king of funniness, mostly because he does ridiculous fart jokes. So we went with that. And I would often tell Sybil where I was at in the story. And she'd be like, okay, so I was thinking. And sometimes it'd be the most ridiculous thing. And I'm like, that makes no sense. But I know I can pull something from it.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. No, I absolutely love that. And I mean, can you share with us, like, is there unique elements and things like that, like in the world, or is it really just based off own country things?
So it's based in two worlds, really. You know, I guess spoiler, but adults are listening. You guys will be right. So in the first book, it's all mostly based in our world. Mm. So here on country, a lot of it's focused sort of on Dark and Young Country, the central coast of New South Wales, which is where I am. And Sybil and Tane, they're the main people in that first book. Mm. But what they do discover is a story spirit who is a spirit from another universe that's connected to ours through a magical bridge. So think bridge to Terabithia, that kind of thing, except like less children die, i.e. there are no children that die in this book. So I'm hopefully not traumatizing anyone.
Yeah.
As opposed to that's the rest of us that were traumatized by that book. So, yeah, we're connected to this other universe. And while that sort of magical world of the story realm is influenced by country here, it's kind of like the magical version. So you'll see different flowers, for example, like the bridge starts with flowers that belong here, are native flowers to this land. And as you cross over, they change into this sort of magical version of that. So there are eucalyptus trees, there are paper bark trees, there are things that allow the kids to feel some sense of familiarity with little magical elements like giant megafauna like we used to have here. And yeah, like I said, the magical flowers, twin moons, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's amazing. And, you know, how have you sort of balanced like engaging storytelling with like, have you had messages that you want to sort of put in there? Obviously you said, you know, your kids are kind of reflected in it and land and things like that. But how have you kind of subtly mixed the two?
Like, it's a great question because there is a lot of kids' media out there that's preachy, that's trying to teach them, you know, oh, you have to share or you have to do this. And I think that it's important that art in general has a message. Art should be dangerous. Art should make change. And at the same time, adults have television and media that does nothing and means nothing. Paul Jennings had a conversation about this because I did an adult, very adult podcast, and we reviewed 90s shows, like kids shows from the 90s. Oh, cool. And one of them we talked about Round the Twist.
Oh, yeah.
And I read an interview with Paul Jennings, and he talked about kids deserve media that's also just fun.
Yeah.
I watch crappy reality television that means absolutely nothing. It can just be entertainment. So yeah. I think I tried to balance the two. The fact is that a lot of the maybe social messaging of the books is just something natural and innate. So in book two, P comes out as themselves because P, the actual human child, is a non-binary kid who figured that out in the last few years and wanted that to be included as a part of their story. Now, it's not harped on, it's not preached at anybody. It's just a matter of fact because that's the matter of the world. There are people and children and adults that figure out who they are later.
Yeah.
They don't know who they are when they're born. They figure out more about who they are, and they should be allowed to be that. It's just P introducing themselves properly to the world.
Yeah.
And I think that in a similar way, there are themes of colonialism and why that's bad. You know, there's a lot of secret jabs at Captain Cook and the British invasion of this country, and being able to do that in a way that's magic. So I'm not telling kids what to think. They can hear the story and figure out for themselves if they think what happened was bad.
Yeah. Amazing.
And as they get older, they'll be able to relate that back to the real world and to our experiences here on this continent. But yeah, I think some of it is also just silly.
Yeah.
And magic.
You need it as well. I mean, I like all sorts of things, but you know, as well, stories for escapism is equally important to take us from our world. I mean, I think, I remember reading, trying to find answers for stuff, but then also reading just to get the hell away from my mind, my existence at that time in life. So yeah, kids are not
very good. Much. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. So what, have you had any marketing approaches for Yarn Quest to connect with the specific readers for the age group? How do you approach marketing your work, or does that really come from like the publishers and things like that? Do you guys sit down and make a plan, or?
It's a combination of the two. As somebody, I've been involved sort of in the arts, sort of creative scene for a few years, and I've also worked in the nonprofit sector for 15 years prior to that, probably again soon. But for me, a part of my work before the books even was also creating content. So I'd started building my platform as a content creator. I don't love it, but social media is here and it's here to stay. And it is the easiest and cheapest way to create a following. So I create content about being a neurodivergent person. So I have autism and ADHD. And they're a big part of my identity as a late diagnosed person, figuring out this is why I am the way I am.
Yeah.
So I have built content around that and found, you know, a small audience, but I grew in the last few years from like 1,500 followers to about 6,000.
Wow. That's,
I'm lazy. I don't even post all the time, and I haven't in a while. But so for me, it was creating content and trying to build an audience that wasn't just about marketing. So I'm not just trying to sell something to people. I'm trying to educate and entertain. And by doing that, I'm also building an audience of people that want to be there from the beginning. And this is something I've also told to artists that I've worked like with managing and that kind of thing, is that people want to invest in your story.
Hmm.
So like if you're a debut author and you're new to the scene, they want to be the people that were like, I knew them before they were famous.
No.
For me, it was allowing people to come in and get to know me in a certain way, find ways to communicate my story so others can feel seen and heard. And then you can use that platform to talk about the things you're doing.
Mm.
So I talk about being a writer and being neurodivergent. Like, how did I write 3 kids' books all at once without having a mental breakdown? Because I didn't. I did have a mental breakdown. But then I can be like, here are the things that I did that I don't think you should do. I'm like, oh, yeah, 3. They're only 12,000 words each, but doing them all at once and having 2 jobs, bit hard.
And being a parent.
Oh, yeah. Also being a parent, which is, you know, 24/7, as you would know. So, yeah, I think it's very much about figuring out what your niche is as an individual person and realizing that social media, TikTok, Instagram, when you're creating reels and creating content, people will find the most random, what you think is so individual to you, lived experience, as relevant to their lives. People you've never met will be like, oh my God, so me. And I'm like, is it though? Or is it actually me? So, social media contrived. You just have to do it. So that's sort of what I did. We sat down with the team and had conversations about what their side of the marketing would be, what suggestions they had. So, I'm lucky enough to be published by Penguin Books Australia. And because they're so big, they have a marketing team.
What's their side? Is it like their channels and things like that? That's what do they do their side?
So for me, what they've done is they've done media releases, press releases, that kind of thing. They've reached out to podcasts. That's why we're connecting. So they were able to do some of that for me. They provided some promotional support on their social media. So myself and Jade, my illustrator, we went and did like half a day in their little studios and we recorded a bunch of stuff for social media. Also organized a bit of a tour for us to go around to bookshops and signing books, which feels so weird.
Really?
You've never done it before. You walk in there real awkward and you're like, hi, so I'm the author of Yarn Quest. And you're like, you don't want to seem presumptuous, like I'm here to sign books. Like, what if they don't want me to? They do.
Yeah.
That's what you're there for. The publisher has organized it. The publicist is all over it. It's okay. And then you go in and sign like 20 books. We also did some shout outs for those booksellers. So doing a few videos and creating our own content and tagging those booksellers and that kind of thing. So
cool.
That's been the end of the publisher. And then on my end, it's just continuing to create content. Jade, the illustrator, shares her drafts and her in progress works from when we were creating the books and just really trying to engage people on that end. It's really for parents because kids are hopefully not on Instagram.
Yeah, not at this sort of stage as well, I suppose. But I hear you as well. Sometimes it seems to be like fortnightly for me, like one fortnight I'll be like, yeah, social media all in. And then another fortnight I'm just like all out. I don't know what it is. It must be like my energy or something like that. But
we're millennials. We're not built for this. I did not have social media in high school. Oh my God. If I did, I don't think I'd ever have a job. But
I don't mind it though. Like, I don't know if it's the stuff that I've posted like or I've liked in the last year, but I seem to go on and I seem to be getting shown, or maybe it's the universe telling me, all these messages of like positivity and hope and things like that, and some really nice
the
things that they
not
are.
The universe. It's going. You need to see this. Yeah, I think it is. It's got those two sides of the coin, right? Like, there's so much goodness in it, and I think that's for me also as an autistic person. It's a great way to connect with other people in real life. You know, I have a pretty extreme personality that some people don't necessarily. They're not sure. But when I get to know people online first and they're like, oh, got it. It's all good, right? So there's so much for me that I think is great. But then it's also so tiring to just, want to make content.
To do a post sometimes and if you've got to be across the board on everything and it's a lot. No, I hear
the admin.
I've heard of these shadow accounts. Like with the podcast, that is a regular post for me, usually on a Friday, not a regular time slot, but always usually on a Friday. And I just cannot seem to get past like a specific amount of people. It just seems to fall back down, or that it's like stuck there. And I've got in touch with them because I'd heard of something called a shadow account where
shadow banned.
Yeah, I don't know. But no one gets back to you.
I'm like, does your content look the same when you look at your grid? Like, do you have a picture that you always use?
My podcast icon is the same, but obviously the people change and the elements of it change. It's still the gray, but I mix it up with like, make sure like I've got a personal post in there. It's not always just me, the podcast, my work or anything like that. I'm not
if it looks the same on your actual grid. So if the image you use, like the actual thumbnail is the same, that can show up as like spam. So then less people will be looking at it. So they really like faces.
Yeah, my face is on there. Your face is going to be on there.
Things are stunning. But they really like faces. They really like talking heads. Like, that's what the algorithm really enjoys. And sometimes having a little title about what it's about and using as much of the in-app. I've done some work with Meta. So I'm like, here's all the stuff that they told me behind the scenes.
Yeah, good.
Right. But also using as much of the in-app editing as you can possibly handle. Like, I do some of my video editing on a different app. And then when I put it in, I do the captions always in Instagram.
Right.
Or on TikTok, whichever you're using, and use any stickers or any titles within the app, because the more you use it, the algorithm can pick up on the fact that you're doing that. And if you're reposting from Instagram to TikTok and vice versa. It will just push it down. Yeah. You want to create it separately and then post them as two separate posts.
Why does it not like it?
Well, they're because meant they to be... only want you to use their platform.
Oh.
Because it makes them money.
Some days I'm like, I know lots. And other days I'm like, I know nothing.
Capitalism. That's it.
Social media seems, I think there's positives and things like that. But going back to us as writers, I think the main thing is to write the book and then do the marketing. Although some people say don't do that, but I think you can get caught up in both. If you're going to do loads of marketing and not have anything to have, like work-wise, that'll probably take it away.
Create your own profile and who you want to be as a personality, positioning yourself as an expert in whatever your lived experience or work experience is. Mm. You can start with that. Even if the book's not ready, it doesn't have to be about the book. It can be about you. So people get invested in you and then you come out with a book and they're like, oh my God, I know Joanne. Oh my God, I've been following her, right? Oh my God, now she has a book. Now I want to buy it, right?
Oh no, that's absolutely great. So you've shared so much already, Brooke, but do you have any other tips, final tips for, you know, maybe aspiring children's authors or writers or people wanting to get into the publishing industry or or just anything across the board from your career and things like that, that you think?
I'm like, we've opened the floor now. I'm going to say more words because I have so many of them. My first thing is children's voices, opinions, thoughts, imagination, and stories are important. They are more important than what adults have to say. We are so boring. We are literally so boring. And if you do not have children in your life that you are actually consulting with, your story is not going to resonate in the same way. Like I'm sure there are amazing writers in the world, but it is so important to get feedback from actual kids because they will tell you the truth because they don't care about your feelings. But also to provide them the opportunity to platform it. Like we're adults, we have the power in this world. So if you can create an opportunity for a kid to have their voice heard when it isn't normally, it's so important.
Yeah.
And I think kids deserve good writing. Like this, maybe it sounds harsh, but there have been a lot of kids' books I've read recently, and a lot of them are early readers that aren't, sometimes the grammar is not even good. Mm. And I'm like, if I read this out loud and it sounds crap, I don't want to read it to my kid. And it's not just about me, but my child deserves stories of high quality. Mm. You know, adults, we get Lord of the Rings. Why do kids not get their version of something of that quality? Do you know what I mean? Not to quote old dead white guys, right? Yeah. But as just an example. And so I think that, you know, coming in and writing, which is also something that my publisher said to me in the beginning, everyone thinks they can write for kids. They are so harsh. You cannot. Not everyone can do it. And if they have to hear another story about teddy bears going on a picnic, some kind of animal going on some kind of picnic or very basic adventure, they're going to explode. Right? Oh, so like let yourself dream in the way you would for an adult novel. Make it big. You can always bring it back down because kids deserve that world that they get to dive into, that they get to learn from. So, take kids writing seriously. I think that's my main thing. You got to be serious about it.
No, that's fantastic advice. And everybody I know is dying to know where they can find Yarn Quest and everything that you do on and offline.
Yes. Okay. Well, so you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Wasted Vitriol. Just request to follow me. I'll accept. It's fine. And if you want to find Yarn Quest, you can find it at a lot of bookshops. If you have a look on the Penguin website, you can find your local one, but you can also get it at Big W, which is great in terms of budget friendly. Mm. It's the most budget friendly version of Yarn Quest you can get. I would push people away from, if you can, Amazon. Don't buy from them just in general because, you know, they're evil. So if you can, go into your local bookshop. So go in and share some love there so we don't lose more of our local bookshops to big international conglomerate. Mm. We don't want more of that to happen. So go spend your money there. Go have a browse, smell some books and buy some Yarn Quest.
Yeah, I'm glad you said smell some books. So my partner thinks I'm absolute, like, you know, I go in and I do.
Every single book nerd that listens to this podcast and writer is going to agree with you. Honestly, I'm like old books, new books, just books.
They smell great.
People that don't like the smell of books are weird, I think. We are the normal ones.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Brooke. That's absolutely amazing. The books sound fantastic. You shared some real, real helpful tips there for everybody listening. And we can't wait to read the books and see what you do next.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Joanne.
So there you have it, folks. The truly inspiring and knowledgeable Brooke Scobie. Next time on the Hybrid Author Podcast, we have Steve Selengut on retirement money secrets. Steve Selengut is the author of his second book, Retirement Money Secrets, a financial insider's guide to income independence with nearly 7,000 copies sold. Steve is one of a very few investment book authors who have directly managed other people's money. He was a private investment manager for 44 years, personally managing around 325 individual portfolios in the USA and abroad. I wish you well in your author adventure this next week. That's it from me. Bye for now.
That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.